On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America is far and away the richest country in the world. For much of the 20th century, that wealth was widely and joyfully shared. But lately, the sharing has changed. The bottom half of the country's households, 50%, now have just 2.5% of the country's wealth. The top 1%, more than a third. Because Americans so support free markets and rich rewards to those who work hard and take risks, this new situation of growing and extreme inequality is hard to talk about. But today, we're going to do it. We've put together a roundtable of three Americans, super rich, poor, and in the middle, to hash it out. You're welcome, too. Up next on Point, rich, poor, and in between, talking about inequality in America. I'm joined in the studio now by three guests, rich, poor, and middle class, and we are very glad to have them and appreciative of their willingness to sort of step up and talk about money in a country where we often do not talk about money. Let me introduce first Roger Bailey. He works as an operations director at a television and audio production company. He's 49, makes about $70,000 a year, hasn't had a raise in 6 years, has two sons about to enter college. Roger Bailey, welcome. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Danielle Axon is with us. She's a certified nursing assistant at a nursing home. She earns $14.67 an hour. Last year, she made about $22,000. There are poorer Americans, but this isn't exactly a ton of money. She's 28. She has a 9-year-old daughter and lives with her parents. Danielle, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And with us, Gil Lamphere, a private equity fund manager. His net worth is over $100 million. He made a good chunk of that money buying and selling the Illinois Central Railroad in 2004. He bought Martha Stewart's Manhattan apartment when she headed to jail for $6.67 million. He's also given back between $10 and $20 million, a lot of it to Princeton University, his alma mater. He's married with four kids. Gil Lamphere, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
First of all, I want to put up a big thanks to each of you for your candor in just sitting down here. Without that, we can't have a conversation like this. Yet I think this is an important conversation for the country. I mean, we're fellow citizens here wherever we fall on the economic ladder, and I'm grateful to each of you for the kind of exposure that just sitting here means. I think there's an important function in it, and we're very grateful for it. Gil Lamphere, let me turn first to you, if
sure.
I may, because you are, in a way, representing, almost defining some of the sort of super wealth that's been created in this country in the last few decades. You've always had wealthy, but there's been a lot of growth at the top of the ladder recently. We want to understand it, how you came to it, and how you look out on the rest of the citizenry from that spot. Tell us how you made your money.
Well, essentially, it's by having capital to begin with, having the benefit of a top-notch education, which is another form of wealth.
Yes.
And having opportunities to put capital at risk in a way which other classes don't have, and multiplying that capital because of the risk we can take. And those are opportunities, as I say, that aren't open to everybody.
You've worked as a venture capitalist, an investment banker, a private equity fund manager. Tell us essentially what that work means. What kind of investments you've made, so we have a sense.
We have invested in companies that have can be run more innovatively. And generally, operating people who are in the industry come to us and say, help me buy this company. I can operate it at three times the profits. And we back those people. We take risk that they're doing something very different than the companies that they might be associated with currently.
And if and when they pull that off, you can sell that company for a lot more than you bought it for.
That's correct.
Which happened with the Illinois Central Railroad and a number of others and left you with a big pot of money.
Illinois Central, it was the worst run railroad in the country. We took it over, and in 1 year, it was the most efficient railroad in the country.
$100 million plus, that's a lot of money, by no means the most money. We've been hearing some very big numbers this week. What does that mean for your lifestyle? Do you have 1,000 houses and 1,000 cars? Or what? Give us the sort of basics of your lifestyle with that kind of income and wealth.
Well, if you're continuing to work on a full-time basis, you have limitations on time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you have more flexibility of time
mm-hmm.
than our two other people here today, but you have flexibility. But if you're working, you have limitations, and so you can't really have things more than those that you can immediately enjoy.
It's not just the life of Riley. You've got your Manhattan, Martha Stewart's former apartment, a very nice one indeed, we imagine, a house in Florida.
Yes.
What else? Transportation. Many wealthy people now fly on private jets. You often do the same?
No, I have something that's much more mundane, which is a share of a company that flies a single prop turbojet located up here in Manchester. They have a fleet of those, so it's slower, but it can take a lot of people and a lot of luggage.
So when your family, I don't know, I'm reading here, a couple of weekends ago, went fishing in Michigan, you've got a portion of that private plane to hop onto and fly to Michigan, or if it's business, to fly to Florida.
You can get to places that are difficult to reach by commercial or inaccessible by commercial.
We would expect with that kind of money you'd want to have some fun. How does the family vacation?
Well, what we've taken to doing is going on cruises of relatively smaller boats, and we've gone up to the Arctic Circle, Costa Rica, the Galapagos. We're going to go to Antarctica.
So the North Pole, the South Pole, and a lot in between.
Yes, and those are educational as well as bring the family together. But again, that's because of some wealth that you can take 2 or 3 weeks off and do that. And those are very expensive trips.
But you've got it, and you want to share that the pleasure of that with your family and the learning of it,
I want them to have the learning. These are children who have been brought up, and one is down in Nicaragua now and has been at Boston Medical here. One taught in Ghana. One taught in orphanages in Tanzania. And they have high respect for money. In fact, they don't spend any money because they know that $400 might buy a pair of shoes here, but it means a building for the orphanage over there. So they have a different equivalency.
Even though you've set aside substantial trust funds for them, so in a way, they're more free to pursue the interests that they have.
Yes, no question about that. And that was the purpose of those funds, that they could pursue things. And what's resulted, which I didn't necessarily expect because it was their freedom of choice, was they chose to help other people.
And that's what they're doing. Gil Lamphere, we're glad you're here. Please stand by. Roger Bailey, let me turn to you next, if I may. 49, earning around $70,000 a year. You know, give us a sense of your life. How long have you been in the work? What's your life circumstance? What's it like to live on $70,000 these days? You live in the Boston area. It's an expensive area. So is it a breeze? Is it tough? How's it feel?
It's not a breeze. But it's not a super struggle at this point. I'm fortunate to have support, family, and friends. I live in a house that's pretty modest, I don't overextend myself. And I think that for that reason, I can live comfortably, and I'm happy without too much.
Your kids are headed to college very soon. That can be a big hit. Are you ready for it?
Most of the way. I had the misfortune of losing my wife to breast cancer about 6 years ago.
We're sorry for that.
Thank you. But along with that, you know, we had the foresight, I guess, or we're called at the right time by the right insurance salesman. So we had a policy on her, and I'm using that money that I got from the insurance policy for my children's education. It's probably not going to cover it all, but we're probably 2/3 of the way there if they go to, you know, state or private colleges.
You're 49. Retirement's not around the corner, but it's not so far off. What about that? Are you set?
No, I wouldn't say I'm set for retirement. I have a 401k through work that has, you know, maybe about $40,000 in it. I've got a whole life insurance policy that, if I happen to survive the next 20 years or so, you know, I'll reap some benefit from that in retirement. But no, I don't feel like I'm really ready to go when I pack it in for.
Pack it in someday for retirement.
Someday, some way, right?
When that comes, it's tough. It's a tough scratch to make that happen sometimes, but you're working on it. Danielle Axon, let me turn to you. I'm looking here, $22,000 income in the last year. You work as a certified nurse's aide in a nursing home. Describe the work you do for us, if you'd be kind enough.
It's very trying work, but very rewarding work.
What kind of people are you working with?
Right now we're working with a lot of elderly and rehab. My nursing home just recently added on a rehab wing where we have people coming in that have had knee replacements, hip replacements, minor surgeries where they're just getting, you know, back on their feet and then going home. But we also have some long-term patients that are there for multiple reasons that have brought them there.
Where do you vacation?
Don't do it very often. We have property in Carver. That
your family does, your parents?
My grandparents actually own it, and, uh-huh. and we go there, and that's probably my biggest vacation spot.
You went a ways off for the wedding of a friend not long ago, maybe 40, 50 miles from your home?
No, actually, it was right in Plymouth.
Oh, okay.
But I had taken some time off for that, which was very difficult. I had actually injured myself at work just before Christmas.
Tore your knee up?
Yes, and I was out from the end of December till just after Easter. And that was very difficult, trying to get back on my feet for that.
Well, you're 28. Why do you live at home with your parents?
I had my daughter at a relatively young age. And
is Dad in the picture or not?
In and out.
Mm-hmm.
Very inconsistent.
Okay.
Makes it very difficult to make ends meet. Fortunately enough, I have extreme family support, and I would not be able to do what I do without them. But it is very difficult being a 28-year-old with a 9-year-old daughter living with my parents and two brothers.
Bob's calling from Williston, Vermont. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think that the question of inequality is just too weak a word. It's horrible what's going on. Gil may be a nice fellow by giving people, John D. Rockefeller used to give dimes away on the street, but the...
Well, Gil gives away more than dimes. He's put a bunch of kids through college on his dime.
Well, yes, but...
Not his own.
Taxes, you know, I'm not really impressed by that. I'm thinking that the average person, like the other two folks on the show, are worried about keeping that job. They're lucky to have a job these days. It's clear with outsourcing and etc. The average person, I don't feel security in my life, and most people are facing. While Gil may leave lavish money for his children, and other people may do that. I would like to leave a pittance for my daughter, too, but I don't see how I can do it. And most people feel that way. And I'm worried about myself. My ultimate retirement plan is to take pills.
That's a radical solution, but a lot of people don't know what they're going to do. Gil Emfear, how do you see it? We've looked at the numbers this week, and, you know, the inequality has grown to a place it hasn't been in quite a long time. You're on a very happy end of that spectrum. When you look out across it, what do you think about it?
Well, I think the caller is absolutely right. I think I wouldn't be impressed by amounts that I've given away in relationship to the wealth. I think this is a major issue in this country, whether the Democrats address it or the Republicans. There have to be innovative solutions. This is a country that was formed on democracy and equality of opportunity, but when the equality of opportunity gets tilted, we have to bring it back into some semblance of balance.
Do you think it's tilted now?
Yes.
By what?
Oh, you get into all the fixed costs that face Danielle and Roger don't affect me.
Like gasoline.
Healthcare.
The basics, the power bill and gas. Yes. To you, that's a pittance. To them, it's probably a significant portion of their income.
That's correct.
What's the significance of that?
The significance is they live a lifestyle that is under pressure, is not necessarily happy all the time. They feel they can't give the opportunities that they have to children. They feel they can't make a difference, and there's no way out. We've got to correct that balance with some innovative solutions, entrepreneurial solutions that the federal government and state governments get behind to give them capital so that they can take the risks and earn the returns that I benefited from.
Roger Bailey, you're the man in the middle here. Gil says, well, look, Roger and Danielle are facing fixed costs. They're sort of the basics gobble up most of what you take home. Do you feel that? Do you feel like you've got, you know, an extra margin to invest for the big score or to go to the North and South Pole on?
Nah, I probably won't be seeing those portions of the world. And I don't have really... I don't feel like I have any additional money to play with when it comes to time to having much fun.
What about investing, or you know, sort of taking a risk that could make you part of the winner's circle?
Well, you know, I'm a pretty conservative guy in that regard. I like to make sure that I keep the money that I have, and the idea of investing in a way that would bring big returns frightens me a little bit, frankly. So I have conservative investments in 401k and some mutual funds that I'm hoping to use that money for my kids, but I don't see it happening or lasting me for retirement or bringing me big benefits as my life goes on here.
Not necessarily even lasting through retirement, and that's a big thing to say. Danielle, how about you? Do you feel like you're in on the party or completely shut out of it in this era of great wealth being created?
I feel completely shut out. I, just like was said, I struggle day to day. It's very frustrating. It's hard to live day in and day out knowing that I've got a mountain of bills that I can't even make a dent on. My daughter has some medical issues where she has ADHD, mm-hmm. and she has to see a neurologist on a regular basis. And I had a period of time that I had no health insurance for her. And I've got 3 or 4 bills that I still have to pay to the neurologist because of the appointments that she had. I, for a while there, had to take her off of her medication, which wasn't fair to her.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no choice because I had no insurance, and it was an expensive medication. And I had to take her off of it for a period of time over the summer a couple of years back.
What do you think about your compensation for the work you do?
I think that the work that I do is extremely, extremely important. It's a very difficult job. And I affect someone's life day in and day out. Some of these people don't have family that come in to see them. And I am their family. I go in there and I see a person smile when I walk in the room, and it makes my day.
For the elderly, for the injured.
Yes. I don't do my job for the money. Yes, I need it, but I don't do it for it.
But you're never going to make anybody a pile of millions doing that, as Gil did, let's say, selling railroads. So then do you say, okay, I'm not producing millions, so it's all right that I'm not paid much?
No. I understand that I'm not going to make millions, and I'm not really looking to make millions. I'm just looking to make ends meet.
Are you bitter? Ever?
Sometimes. I don't live that way because I appreciate everything that I do have. I was brought up that I work for what I want, and that's okay. I don't mind working for what I want.
You can almost go on welfare at your level. Have you considered it?
I've considered it, but I wasn't brought up that way. I have every ability to be able to work. And there's people out there that can't work.
And yet you've got fundamental issues on the line, health, your own, and your daughter's relationship. I think I understand you to have said you have to work so much, you don't have time, let's say, even to find a husband.
Yes. For a long time there, I was working every weekend so that I could be home during the week with my daughter. And it's not exactly easy to date when you're working Friday and Saturday nights every week.
Roger, what do you think about fairness in this whole picture?
I think it's grossly unfair. People like Danielle, and there are tons of them. I work with some. I live with some in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I come into contact with them daily, and I don't know how they keep smiling because it's a struggle. Every day is a struggle, and, you know, and the kind of work that she does deserves a better reward than what she gets for it, I think.
We heard that the happiness that you say you hang on to, despite sometimes some struggles, but is that related to a fundamental presumption that there's fairness in the system?
I think that's what's drilled into us, or what we sort of come to accept being Americans living in America, is that we have the ability to be Gil, perhaps, and we can hold on to that dream. But, you know, the reality is that it's very difficult to reach that stage without, you know, nerve and some initial resources to deal with. And there are so many of us that, like you said, Tom, I consider myself very fortunate to be happy and to be making
alive, breathing, sort of, you've got kids and you've got food on the table.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't begrudge Gil his wealth or his moxie and how he's gotten there.
Yeah, that's the American perspective. It's the American way.
But by the same token, as Gil says, we've got to figure out some way to help out people who are not necessarily in my position as much as people who are in Danielle's position, who you know, work hard, are trying to support a family and looking not beyond today, really, in terms of how they live.
You're generous, sir. Jeanette's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeanette. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah.
The biggest point I want to make is that I come from a family who we had no education growing up about money. And I think that's where, when we talk about innovative solutions, I don't know what's presently in schools because I've been out of school for 30 years. I think it has to be in the schools more, because I have trouble with money to this day.
You think that's the nub of it? If we teach kids how to save and how to look for the best, interest rate, then we'll all be...
That's not all of it, mm-hmm. yet. I think a lot of what happens to people is they don't know how to handle money. And that's what gets people in trouble, is not understanding money. And the reality is we live in a society where money is your survival, and it has, we're hearing. So I think if we learn
a little bit more, maybe you'll be better off. Let us put it to the guy with the money at the table. Gil, I mean, it's really interesting. In this conversation, you can hear people sort of taking it on themselves. If my investments had been a little better, if I'd had more moxie, if my kids were better educated about money, is that the issue? Should Americans be saying, hey, I've just got to get a little more savvy here? Is that the answer, Gil?
It's part of the answer, but we're talking about basic inequalities of how much money you have at your disposal to invest, whether it be for retirement or whatever. And what we're talking about is the hope, day-to-day hope that Danielle and Roger and the people who have called in have about the future. I mean, we're talking about the essence of this country. Yes, education. But we've got to give them some freeboard. See, they're operating
free
without...
Freeboard, what does that mean?
Freeboard means that they don't have to worry about the last $100 or the last $1,000 or $2,000.
Or $20.
Or $20. Give you an example. I was down at Johns Hopkins where I sit on the advisory board, and there are people that come into that hospital who cannot afford to take the cab across town to the other hospital. Okay, that's what we're, that's a whole different class than is represented here. But you begin to understand the pinch, and that affects what this country is about and the outlook people have. And, let's take $40 billion and let's put it in some accounts and let people build capital. Education gets them oriented towards starting early, which I think is very important, so the compounding can take over. So education is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to set aside some money like we've had to come from other sources and say, okay, you grow it.
How many trust funds can we put together, though, in this? Danielle, do you feel, okay, you're an American citizen, 28 years old, fully of age, do you feel that you're able to take full part in the life of this country, the life of this democracy? Is it open to you?
Right now, no. I can't live on my own. I live in my parents' house. I don't necessarily pay the taxes that it goes along with owning property. I can't afford rent. I don't feel that I contribute much more than my income tax, from my paycheck. It's very difficult. I feel like I'm on a treadmill that I can't quite get off. I feel like the gerbil going around the wheel and it won't stop. It's constant. It's constant, paycheck to paycheck, and the bills just continue to pile up. And it's hard to feel like I'm part of much more than just what I've been sucked into of my own financial insecurity. And it's very hard.
$100 million or $22,000 a year or something in between. Matt's calling from Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. One of the things that I think is really key, and a lot of people, I think your wealthy caller alluded to it, is that the government allows people with money to keep that money. The tax laws, the influence to our elected officials. He sits on the board of Johns Hopkins Hospital. If he were making $22,000 a year, I don't think the board would want him. So we kind of have a self-perpetuating system in this country where the haves will continue to have more and more. On the other hand, the opportunities that existed, say even for my parents, where all you had to do was learn a trade, work 40 hours a week, and you were kind of guaranteed a little house in Levittown and a new Chevy Impala in the garage, Well, those are gone. There's no guarantees anymore. Good jobs without a lot of education don't exist. So the gulf is just going to continue to widen.
So what do you do about it, Matt, without taking away the kind of incentive that has inspired a lot of Americans to do some pretty amazing things in business and create a lot of wealth over the years?
I think what you need to do is everybody talks about education, and one of your callers actually hit on it. I think that what's lacking is not secondary education, because, again, the folks that get the best education and go to Harvard with no problems, don't need scholarships, are likely the folks that really don't need that kind of an education. They have the money to start with. But I think the younger era, we've got to start saying to people, like your first, like your person at the bottom of the tier, you know, you're 19 years old, folks. You can't have children. You need, by education, you need to look around and say, okay, what can I do with my life? How can I, and we need to start in middle schools. We need to start in high schools. We need high school courses that are going to tell kids, this is what compounded interest means.
But, you know, Gil Lamphere, our $100 million man, says that may not quite be enough, that you can have an education, and maybe you'll succeed with it, but if you don't have a little bit of risk capital at the edges or some freedom to sort of move on what you've learned, it's tough to move.
But if you understand what you need to do, and maybe more importantly, what you need not to do, I think that so much of what we see is a permanent underclass that's just basically perpetuating itself time after time, where there aren't two-parent families, there aren't a strong home life.
And on it goes. Matt, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Roger, how do you see it? Do you think the package still works? If you go and you get the education, if you're lucky enough to get it, can you still go out there and jump across this income gap, this inequality chasm? Do you feel it?
It can be done, and it is done these days through a lot of different avenues, through sports or through entrepreneurial spirit, through franchising Dunkin' Donuts dealerships,
right.
That kind of thing. You can turn around, and if you have that kind of nerve, I think you can make some money. It's not easy for the guy who's like my mom and dad to make it happen in the American dream the way that perhaps they did.
Harder today. I want to turn for a moment to Washington, where Heather Boucher has been listening along with the rest of us here. She's senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. It's a think tank in Washington. Her work focuses on the U.S. labor market. Heather Boucher, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I wonder what you hear in these stories, Heather. There's a lot of generosity between these people in the room, even though they fall at very different levels of income and wealth. What are you hearing in their stories and their interaction?
Well, I think it's marvelous to have these three folks on the show today, and it certainly is an interesting way of getting at this issue of inequality. One of the things that I first heard, of course, was that Roger hasn't had a raise in 6 years, and that's consistent with what we've seen for Americans overall at the middle and the bottom of the income distribution, that today average incomes are lower than they were a few years ago, back in the late 1990s, early 2000s. So certainly a lot of folks are experiencing the kinds of things that Roger and Danielle are talking about. Now, the thing is that what we've seen over the past generation is just such an explosion of inequality, and most of it's taken the form of the very wealthiest among us getting even richer and sort of pulling even further from the pack than the rest of us.
Do we know how to talk about that as a society?
No, we don't like to talk about it as a society. We like to pretend that it doesn't exist, or that it's our fault, for those of us in the middle at the bottom, for being where we are, when in fact the rules have really changed, the rules of the economic game, the market that we're in. And increasingly, it's harder for those at the bottom and the middle to work their way up because, as Gil said, folks don't have capital, but also all of the basics and the things that we need have become more expensive, and we've been seeing this decline in upward economic mobility for over a generation now.
Mobility was pretty key to the American dream, though. I mean, we're all on board as long as we all have a shot at it. Has that mobility really changed?
It has changed. It's gotten less likely. It's less likely today that a child from a moderate or low-income family will make it to the top. You know, back in the early part of the last century, there were these Horatio Alger stories of the kid who, you know, the orphan or whatever, who makes it to the top through some pluck and some help.
But that still happens. We've all seen the founders of Google and, you know, lots of wealth made in the 90s and even now.
Well, and one thing that Gil said, and that a couple of the other callers have said, is that those folks that have made it, and even the differences for both Roger and Danielle, the difference between making it today and not, is more about luck than it was in the past, that folks aren't as likely to move up through the labor market. You know, there's fewer job ladders for people to move up in their firms. We're seeing wages stagnate and people having to take their wage cuts just to keep their health insurance. And so folks are really having to rely a little bit more on luck and a lot less on the kinds of sound economic security that families used to be able to rely on.
And what about perpetuation here? Gil, very understandably, is got trust with all that money. He's got trust funds for his kids. They're in their 20s. So they're going to start out in a pretty good place. Now, they're doing great things with that freedom we're hearing. They're out in the world helping those less fortunate, but they're starting in a pretty fortunate spot.
Well, interestingly, they're helping those less fortunate abroad, which is also interesting because there's many of us here at home. But those children are incredibly lucky and not like the rest of the children in America. And, of course, the tax cuts that we've made over the past few years only make it easier and more likely that the wealthy will be able to hold on to all that wealth and not have to sort of redistribute it, as it were, to the rest of us.
Heather Boucher at the Center for Economic Policy Research. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for joining us for a minute here.
Thank you.
Kim is calling from Winchester, Massachusetts. Hi, Kim. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. I worked my way from a middle to lower middle class background to what I guess I would consider to be the upper class through a lot of hard work and certainly a bit of luck sprinkled in.
Yeah.
I think that there could be a two-pronged approach to this problem. One is I'd like to see a mentor program where families like Gil's and families like mine could adopt families like Danielle's, not to solve their problems, but to help give them the tools that they will not have on their own.
But families like Gil's, I don't know about yours, Kim, but families like Gil's are in what, the top 0.1% of the country that have to adopt, what is that, 100 or 1,000 families apiece and mentor them. That's a lot of mentoring.
But I think more families could adopt families like Danielle's. I don't think that you have to be a billionaire to be able to impart some of the wisdom that you've learned and certainly help to give these people some access, whether it's knowledge about money, whether it's access they won't have on their own, or whether it's just, you know, some of the self-confidence to help break these cycles of poverty, which usually include early pregnancy and lack of college
education.
Do
you think inequality is a problem not just for the families but for the country, Kim?
Yeah, it's absolutely a problem countrywide, and with our current tax system, as your previous caller just mentioned, with, you know, the abundance of tax cuts going to families like Gil's, and not going to families like Danielle's. Families like Danielle's need to be more politically active and empowered. And families like Gil's need to push for more tax equality instead of enjoying the tax cuts and the push to eliminate the estate tax. We should be encouraging people to give back. And families like mine, you know, nobody likes to pay taxes, but look, I'd be more than happy to pay more taxes so that we have more parity across these economic lines.
We'll ask Gil and Danielle and Roger about that, but let me get another call first from Sumter, South Carolina. George is on the line. Hi, George, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
We're well. What do you think, George?
I normally don't call in, but this one has hit home in so many levels. First off, I consider myself on the lower end of the money scale.
What do you make roughly, George, a year?
It's hard to say. I'm self-employed, so it varies.
Mm-hmm. Kind of comes and goes. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, but that's by choice. So I would probably say about $12,000.
So right down there. So how do you see this whole conversation?
It's mostly the choices we make. I always have trouble with the term working poor, because if you're working, you have income, and the bills we have are by choice. No one's making us buy certain things that we buy.
Man's got to eat. A man probably has to put gas in the car. A man's got to pay the electrical bill.
But you don't have to go to, you know, the restaurants to eat, and you definitely don't have to own a Lexus to get to work.
You make $12,000, let's say. Do you consider yourself working poor?
Yes and no, because it's by choice. The education I have didn't come from college, but it came from other entrepreneurs and people who understood money.
Do you think we've got a problem in the country around inequality, George, or are you just ready to roll with it as it is?
I don't think it's a problem. I think we have a problem first by thinking that everything starts off fair. You know, we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Things shouldn't be handed. At any time, because of my education and past work history, I can go ahead and get the jobs that I want to make the money I want. But I'm trying to start a business, so I choose what I have. But I think the education and the freedom that comes with that education is what determines, you know, what we do with how we get our wealth.
George, we've got it, and I appreciate your call very much. Gil, let me turn to you. Here's a couple of things. First of all, I mean, I'm struck by the incredible tolerance that Americans have for these disparities of wealth. Maybe it's exactly right, but here's George. He makes $12,000 a year, and he's okay with that. You know, sitting where you sit, what do you think? Do you think he should be a little more up on his hind legs about it, or this is a lucky and good thing for the country that George feels this way?
Well, I think George is a rare person with character and takes on responsibility for himself and his choices. I'd say for every George, there are probably 50 Georges that are just getting swamped with family and income and holding it together. So I admire him.
What about Kim? She says she's pretty well off. She says maybe we ought to change the tax code so that folks with a lot of money are sort of pitching in more. We've got a big debt in this country. It's getting bigger. Should people like yourself be paying higher taxes or not?
The answer is yes. And you have to make sure the tax code is oriented so that you still get rewarded for taking risk.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all Americans at the upper end would pay a little bit more if they felt that they could address this problem. But what you don't want is that money being dissipated by Washington into things that are politically questionable. I mean, if there was a very defined way of setting that money aside, I think you'd have overwhelming support for it.
Roger, Danielle, what do you guys think about taxes and Gal? Has it worked for you? Roger, you first, maybe.
You know, taxes are, I hope, taking care of a lot of our basic needs and a lot of things that aren't so basically needed, like you know, support of you know, war efforts. Like Gil, my concern would be, is this money that, or the extra money that the wealthy are being taxed, is it going into the right place? And I'm a little cynical about how the government would handle that, perhaps. And then if it were put in the right place, what would that right place be? Is it in occupational training? Is it do you give people more money, or I think you have to make it something that works for them, helps them work.
Danielle, how about you? There have been very significant tax cuts across the board, but a lot, of course, the absolute dollar amount has been greatest at the top. The top earners have, you know, got the most back here. There's talk about getting rid of the estate tax so that Gil or others like him could pass on the whole $100 million to their kids. Is it the right thing?
No, I don't think it's the right thing. It's really hard for me to assess it just because, like I had said, the taxes that I pay are basically just what's on my paycheck. And some of it I would like to see more kickbacks. Like, to kind of touch on a couple of the callers on making choices and trying to better yourself, I am trying to better myself. I am going to school.
You're working on a nursing degree.
Yes, I'm working on a nursing degree. However, when I do get my nursing degree, I will still be struggling. I will still be barely making enough to get by. Granted, it will be a step up from where I am now, but I'm working hard for it. Just as Gil did for his money, mm-hmm. He worked hard for his. I'm working extremely hard for mine.
You said you're surrounded by people, often women working 60, 70, 80 hours a week in this nursing home.
Yes. I myself see many people at my nursing home that work 16-hour shifts 5 days a week.
That
I myself have done 6-7 days a week, working at least an 8-hour shift, if not a 12 or 16-hour shift, for whatever the reason may be. And to respond to, I believe it was George's call, where you make choices. You don't have to, you know, drive a Lexus, or you make choices on the purchases you make. I don't drive a Lexus. I drive a car that is a moderately affordable car, but gas prices keep going up. I have to put food on the table for my daughter. Mm-hmm. I did not, granted, yes, I made the choice to have my daughter at a young age, and I may have been able to make a different choice. But the fact of the matter is she's here. I can't imagine my life without her. However, I did not choose to have a child with the disabilities that she does have. She is a wonderful, loving, a very animated child, and she brings joy to everybody she touches. But it is very difficult in hearing somebody say that I make the choice of the things that I spend my money on, when the actuality of it is my child can't learn.
And there's not much money there.
John's
calling from Del Mar, California. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi, Danielle, I really do appreciate you having to share that story. My mom was also a CNA. She raised three kids, and we got into a divorce. I'm one of the kids. I'm actually the oldest. And coming from that viewpoint of extreme adversity, my mom having to raise all three of us, and a lot of the heartaches that are associated with it, I've learned a lot from her experiences. It changed my work ethic. And eventually, now that I see that picture, and at a young age, I'm trying to develop what my social standpoint is now by getting a better education and whatnot.
John, nationally, do we have a problem or not? How do you see it?
Nationally, I think we do have a problem. A lot of it has to come out with the education, as stated earlier, but a lot of that also has to do with sharing the experiences and letting other people know that, you know, hey, sharing the experience, sharing the knowledge, letting people know what the tools out there today contribute to those who are trying to get out of those situations at a very young age so that they can help their family.
John, we've got it, and we hear your kudos to Danielle and her struggle. Our time grows short. I want to ask each of you quickly. Roger, maybe starting with you, what do you think? Steady as she goes? It's all right the way it is? Or, you know, big view, do we have a problem in this country around inequality?
Yeah, I think there's a problem. None of us have really come up with a great answer here. And I don't see much changing. But I just keep smiling.
We're going to work on solutions tomorrow. Danielle, how do you see it? As a nation, a problem? Or this is just the way America works, always has, and on we go?
I think there's a problem, but as Robert said, I don't know if there's a definite, easy answer. I think we all need to struggle and do the best we can, and as you said, keep smiling. I mean, we all can value the fact that we live in a relatively free world where we live in America, and we have to value that.
And amen to that. Our time grows short. Gil Lamphere, $100 million man. A significant problem here for the country, or on we can go?
It's not a problem. It's a huge problem, and it's going to get worse. So you got to deal with it now.
Get worse because?
The compounding of wealth will continue to distance itself between the classes.
And off it goes. We're going to look tomorrow at solutions, the last day of our four-day series on inequality in America. I could not be more grateful to all three of you today for your candor, for your openness, for sharing. I think it's an exercise for all citizens, and you've really made it possible. Danielle Axon, thank you so much for being with us today. We wish you and your daughter the best of luck. Thanks for joining us. Roger Bailey, wonderful to have you. We wish you and your kids the best of luck. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And Gil Lamphere, representing that tip top, you're generous with your candor. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.